ministering to himself and his friends, the disciples, spoke to them in chapter 15 of John, we read it, and said, I no longer call you servants. I call you my friends. I've never had a home. My mom and dad put me in a basket as a baby and took me to Peru. I grew up to be a rebel, and Daddy sent me back to Scotland, a country I did not know, a people I did not understand, a culture I never had anything to do with. To join the British Army, I joined the army, and the army sent me to Germany. And my life cracked up completely in Germany. I landed on the streets. I had nobody. I could not go home because my dad was a good man. He was a missionary. And I felt it's impossible. I cannot go back there. I was on the streets after having lived a life as a pimp and a thief and a robber. I had nowhere to turn to. I had no friends. And it was a point in my life where the Lord reached out his hand and touched me and said, Peter, now that you've lost everything, I want you to understand that I am your friend. I am your best friend. I am closer to you than your brother. And I was brought up with my brother in one bed. Missionaries have one bed. In India they do. The whole family sleeps in one bed. Mama, Papa, and Babu Kuti, and Sonali Kuti. And Grandma sleeps on the floor alongside, if she's still alive. And then the auntie and the uncle come in from Calcutta, and they all sleep, 16 of them, in the one room. They live so close together. Deep friendships, because the need is so great. There's no room outwardly, yet inwardly there's so much room. They come so close to each other. And having found a friend in Jesus, I found that I've got lots of friends. My dad wasn't a friend of Germans. He was a major in the British Army, and as a Christian, he had to behave as if he loved the Germans. And I believe in his heart, he did what he could do, and he was sincere about it, but the wounds were so deep. He had been hurt so badly, he had been hit so badly, that it was a challenge. And then, after I came back from having been 4.5 years in Germany as a soldier and a few years as a civilian, I got saved in Germany. So it was in enemy's land that I met my best friend. And then I fell in love with this lovely German girl, my Schnuckiputz. And she was my Schnuckiputz 33 years ago, and she is still my Schnuckiputz today. And nobody is going to take her away. apart from him that loves her more than I do, and he will take her one day, but I guess I'll be there first. I'm 10 years older. But I took this lovely schnookie-puts of mine to Scotland to introduce her to my parents. And my dad fell so badly in love with my schnookie-puts that although he was an old man, I had to say to him, "Keep your hands off. She's mine." And my mom saw how he was attracted to her in a healthy way, but man, that brought dynamics into her relationship to him. We're friends. We are friends of the Most High. And he has chosen us. He has picked us to be his friends. That's the way I just cannot believe it. And as friends this morning, he is saying, as he said yesterday, I believe it with all my heart, Bill, Pastor Bill confirmed to me this morning in the car. He says, "Come." And while meditating on "come" yesterday, I left something out, and I was so angry with myself, and we all know it. Don't we, Jeff? You're standing there in the pulpit, you got it all set up, and you get drawn away. And I get drawn away by flesh, you know, especially while ministering. I am constantly tempted by my flesh. And rather than bring Christ, I'm a hindrance. I get in between. I'm in his way. As I minister, I am a stumbling block. So when I got back, I thought, "Peter, how did you miss that verse?" And to Bill, sitting in the car with Bill, he said to me this morning, "Do you know, Peter?" And he quoted the verse I forgot yesterday. And it was about the coming. We were saying, coming is so difficult, isn't it? It should be so easy. Gabby used to say, as I said yesterday, "Come," and I was there, man. Oh. The Lord says to me, "Come and forgive your brother." Man, it's taken years. When it's coming in things that hurt, where we have been hurt, where we are still hurt, where we have hurt others, where we are embarrassed. The weight of sin makes it so difficult for us to come to our best friend who rejoices in forgiveness. You want to make Jesus happy this morning? You come to him. What do I have to bring to Jesus? What is mine? You know, there's nothing in this world that is more mine than my own sin. And it is so ugly. It is so dirty. And this is the verse I had. Coming is so difficult. And I just flipped over there as I was preparing in the aeroplane, flying over. I remembered this verse and I thought, where's that verse about the man with the withered hand? I just had to flip over and I found it in verse 13. "Then saith he to the man, stretch forth thy hand. And you know, this man's hand is withered. God, you're asking a man whose hand is withered. I have a friend who has a withered hand, and he's got a, you know, he's got this sleeve over it, whether it's his jacket or his shirt. It's ugly. He hides it. And he's a good-looking man. He's slim and tall. He's got a beautiful wife. He's capable, but there's this ugly thing in his life. And he covers it up as we cover up the ugly thing. Let's not cover it up. Let's come into the light with our sin. The Lord rejoices in forgiveness. He wants, he desires to forgive. That's why he came all the way from heaven to hell. Just to forgive. And without forgiveness, there is no friendship. No, there is no friendship. So he said to this man, it's impossible. The man cannot do it. Now, we've got things that we can do. We believe it's impossible, but we can do them. And strangely enough, we want to do the things he does. We want to do the wrong things. We're not doing the things that he would have us do. We find it difficult. Our lives, a living offering, which is the only worship that is worthy of him who offered up his life for us. We can reach out our withered hand. What's the problem? It's ugly. It's ugly. The beauty in the Lord's Supper, the beauty of Christ's love. Calvary is beautiful, yet it is so bloody, so ugly. And watching my brother this morning, listening to my brother, watching him, but he should have gone to Hollywood. Our brother from Panama. The joy in life is beautiful. And I'd rather have been a man who is like he is. I'd like to be like him. I've got an African brother. His name is Silalem. He comes from Ethiopia. And you know, I said to Silalem years ago, I said, if I came back into this world, if I was a Hindu and I believed in reincarnation, I'd come back like you. I think colored people are the most beautiful people in this earth. Ed, you're the one exception. There's the flash, it's getting in. Ed is beautiful, Raz is beautiful. Man, faithful friends. I am so embarrassed, I was so humbled that I asked to ask my brother to pray with me. Randy, before I came up here, because I didn't think I was going to be able to come up. Do you know that where Raz has his need, that's where he's blessed us? I'll not say anything more than that. He's given what he doesn't have, and he's given freely. And he has been faithful. He has been so faithful that I am put to shame and I am embarrassed as I stand here. But he says, come. Do what you think you can't do, and that strengthens me. Dad taught me I could do things I didn't think I could do. traveling out to South America on the ship. We were a month at sea, and it's ugly crossing the Atlantic. 14 days without seeing land. And all we had was, they were cargo ships, right? Banana boats. As missionaries, we couldn't afford to ship across the Atlantic in these queens of the ocean. They were banana boats. And that's how we got to Panama and traveled through Panama. But all there was just this little swimming pool, and the sailors used to put it up, made out of canvas, and they'd put up these canvas sheets, and they'd put a pipe in the fire pipe. Your hose, exactly, right. In German, this is hose. This is hose. Hosen. And then they'd put it into this canvas box. And that was the water we had for almost a month. That was it. That was where we had fun and games. And my dad taught me I could do things I couldn't do. At the age of about, 4 or 5, he picked me up and threw me in. I didn't know I could swim. You can come. The question is, do we want to come? There's something that gets in there, in between its pride. It's covering up. It's the fear of being known as we are known. That's the problem. But I want to say, brother, sister, this morning, He knows you and loves you. And to be known as we are known, also here in the fellowship, is such a beautiful thing. He is asking us to become as friends together. And I believe that the most beautiful friendship that He has ever given us, apart from the friendship that we have with Him, is the friendship with our schnookyputs. My best friend is Gabby. It used to be the pimps, the hard guys, you know, motorbikes, leather jackets, beer. Today I'm a softie. It's my wife. And I don't go anywhere without my wife. Apart from Scott. Pastor Scott asks me to come and fellowship here. She would come. She would love to come. But I do everything I can with my wife. I won't go anywhere. I'm just like a little boy. Now, I don't want this to sound wrong and you to get it wrong, but I still call her Mama. I always called her Mama. And I'm not a Mama's boy. I'm a Scotchman. I'm not a Mama's boy. But it's a closeness, you know? I'm jealous about my kids seeing them lying on her breast. Now they're all out of the house, I can get back to it. Your kids are not your best friends. Your wife is. They leave you. Your wife will not leave you, because we are in one yoke, and that's where we left out. And this yoke must never be broken, because it symbolizes in my neighborhood the relationship to my mama, to my the mother of my children. The fruit that we have brought, the fruit that God has given us, is seen. They can see it, and they come to us and they ask, "Hey, it's different with you, Peter. Why is it? What's different about your children? What's different about the relationship with your wife? You never go anywhere on your own. You're always holding hands. Is this some kind of bondage? Are you sick?" No, you guys are just blind. You believe you can see, but you have not seen the most beautiful thing that God has ever given to man. And that's the beginning of Genesis. He takes this woman and gives it, entrusts it to him. And we are in this yoke, brothers. And that is what we read. And I'm going to finish reading these verses together with you. I don't know how long it's going to take me to finish. It could be an hour, but we're finished. Ephesians and 1 Peter. Ephesians 5, you all know it. Romans, Ephesians, Philippians, here we have him. Ephesians 5. And right in the middle of chapter 5, we all know it by memory. And as Raz said, you guys, you know, we've come to share something that he has given us. We all know. We're only remembering this morning. I got a bad mind. I got the worst mind in this place, and that's why God has chosen me, the least of all, when it comes to the power of the mind. He has asked me to come and say, let us remember. Communion is remembering. It's a remembrance. And it's the only party we are called to have together, remembering his love for us. And as we do it here, he says in verse 25 of chapter 5 of Ephesians, husbands, love your wives even as Christ also loved the church. When my neighbors see my marriage, see my children, and my love relationship to my wife, I tell them, that's a picture of Jesus. If you like what you see, and they like what they see, they don't necessarily accept it. You can like something and still reject it. But they like it and they come and ask questions. And I say, that's nothing. You want to see my Jesus. This is just a little reflection. And it's weak. It's full of failures and shortcomings. But we're unyoked, you know. And I've had my problems with Gabby, and Gabby has had her problems with me. And dear sisters, while counseling, you wives of pastors, be honest. When a sister comes to you and asks you, look, I'm praying I've fallen in love with this young man, and he's going to go to missions, he's got a calling as a pastor, should I marry him? You should tell these sisters, my dear sister, you should tell these sisters, these young sisters of you, count the cost. Count the cost. To marry a pastor is a great challenge. And not only for the sake of the dedication to the flock, but because of the principle, Joshua's principle, me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That is great commitment. No, it is because the failures and embarrassing weaknesses of a pastor. You are all watching us. It's a high calling, not because of the position, but because of the responsibility that we have. And in the responsibility that we have, the authority, we must never forget that the authority that we have stands or falls in the principle of being upright and letting the church know me and my failures and accept correction and standing up front and making a fool of myself. Going through embarrassing situations. It's not only that, it's also Ruth Graham once said, as she was asked, "Do you ever considered divorce?" She said, "Divorce, no. Murder, yes." You know, we're laughing, but I believe with all my heart there are deep truths in the things that we laugh about. It's as if we know things and we get out of control and we laugh about it because we know that's right. And you know, I believe that Ruth meant this. It's a great challenge for a woman. And it takes good women to remain faithful to missionaries and pastors. And together we have in this yoke the responsibility of remaining faithful. It is, as it were, a picture of the relationship from Christ to his bride. And the difference really is the responsibility. The man carries the responsibility as Christ carried the responsibility for his bride, the church. So we carry the responsibility. And there are few, aren't there, sisters? You can look and look and look for men who really want to carry responsibility to step out. It's so difficult to find them. Real men. Men that are like Christ. I say to my daughter, "Leah, find somebody that's like Jesus. I don't care how heavy, how broad, how tall, how short, how thick, how thin in his mind or any part of his body. As long as he loves Jesus, you bring us somebody that loves Jesus with all their heart, with all their mind, and with their soul, and that's going to be good." You see, she's running about one Bible school to the other, and the great dangers they're in, eh? We have a sister at church who sent her son to a Bible school here in the United States. And being a German, she says, "Sonny boy, don't marry anybody except for German. And don't bring me an American daughter-in-law back." And what happened? Not thy will. Not my will. But thy will. Our relationship to our wives, brothers, must be as Christ. He carried my sin and opened not his mouth. My dad had strengths and weaknesses, and I learned to love and respect them in both. Respect him and love him also in his weakness. He was a little man, and I think he battled with complexes. He had a powerful mind but a small body. He was only about so tall. Jeff said yesterday, somebody said, "Jeff, stand up," and he was sitting down. He says, "I am standing." My dad could have said that. He walked about sitting down all his life. But he had a powerful mind. And we'd left home, and my one sister was still home, Ellen, and she was there to the end. She cared for my parents, you know, all her life. She played the role God had given her, and that was to care for the parents while we were on the mission field. Pastor, we've all got a role to play, and we must make sure we're playing the role God has given us in and outside the marriage. The role of the woman, the role of the man, it must be right. But getting back to what I was trying to share. And getting towards the end of Dad and Mum's life, things were difficult. And they lived together, you know. And Ellen and Mum were good friends. They were really close. And Daddy had been the missionary. He had a heart for the church and for missions and for teaching and preaching and counseling. You know, he was an outgoing man. Away from the family. So Mom and Ellen used to chat a lot. And a lot of things they used to talk about, I thought, maybe it would be good just not to speak about those kind of things. You know what it's like? It's not upbuilding. You can do it, but it's not upbuilding. And I could feel the weight at home at times. I could feel the weight, and I saw my dad, you know. And he was personally affected by the talk that was going on. But you know, that man held his mouth. He didn't open up his mouth. Christ, as he was crucified, he opened not his mouth. If he had done, we would still be damned by sin. He didn't. He carried our sin by not opening his mouth. He says, I am, it is me. I am the Lamb. I'll carry your sin and I'll not speak about it. And Dad did not speak. He would not even speak to me. And I could see how that man was suffering. He suffered and held his mouth. That's the way we should be loving our wives. And you have something, brothers, and I'm going to finish with this. Time is flying. If you have a man that loves you that way, as a woman, you cannot resist it. I believe that God's love is irresistible. Irresistible, when you are faced with it, it hits you right in the middle of the heart. You can refuse it. Sure, you can say no to it. But it is irresistible, that love at the cross. And the love for our wives, that it helps. You know, I was sitting with a dear sister there at church not long ago. And she turned to me, just out of the blue. And there was this burden on her heart. And she said, my husband has not touched me for 6 months. He is not in the yoke with me. He is not close to me in things concerning the love in the body. He doesn't stretch out and touch me anymore. And she's a good woman and he's a good man. And it looks good on the outside. But there's such a danger. My body belongs, Pastor. Your body belongs to your wife. Oh, we're so spiritual. Yeah, my life belongs to the church. No, my brother, first of all, the ministry starts at home. Your body, and that keeps us safe. You know, my wife's body, when she was young, it was so beautiful. You know, I was drawn to my wife because the beauty of her body as well. Of course, her soul and the spirit, her love for Jesus. It was more than the body. It's agape, philia, and eros. But all three belong. And somehow or other, within the body of Christ, we think things concerning eros are dirty. No. Paul writes very clearly. It says, your body, my brother, belongs to your wife. And do not say no. Apart that you have her permission for fasting. Now, this guy's been fasting for 6 months and he's still alive. Do you know the yoke? The closeness in the body keeps me safe. And I'm going to be honest here with you. I don't care. Maybe we're going to have to, you know, go beep for about 20 minutes here. The closeness that I have to my wife's body has kept me safe. It's the yoke. It keeps me safe. There's safety in the yoke. When I find satisfaction in my wife, in her young body, she's given us, God has given us through her body 5 children. And her body's changed a little bit. Do you know, but I love that body as it was when it was. Now it's more like this. But I tell you, there is more to beauty than meets the eye. The beauty and the strength in our relationship in every area of our relationship is faithfulness. I look at her body, and that's what the Bible teaches. It's crazy, isn't it? Whoever hates his own flesh, his wife, despises, rejects her, does not commune with it, does not live with it, is out of his mind. I love my wife, and I love her body, and I love her soul, and I love her spirit, her love for Jesus. And when I get up in the morning, she's up. She's been up for an hour. And I am not bragging about this. I am ashamed. I'm like David. I lie in my bed and meditate on the Lord. My wife sits and reads the Word. And in between I fall asleep as the disciples did in the garden. But I do my meditating in bed. Her love for Jesus is such a challenge that she's been faithful to me. You know, that she's given herself to me. Ever I came and desired her, she was there for me. How can I ever be unfaithful to this woman? She has loved me. She has given me children. How can I turn to anybody else? We will turn if we are not giving each other what the Lord has given us. And first of all, the men, we give ourselves to our wives. We love our wives as the Lord loved the bride, the church, and that love is irresistible. And I say to brothers and sisters when they come to me and have their marriage problems and say, oh, you know, my wife, she doesn't love. You see, you're not loving her. That's the problem. That is biblical principle. If you love your wife, she is going to respect you. If you love your wife, she's going to be like butter in your hands. And it's so important for us, isn't it all, brethren, take your wives seriously. In 1 Peter, we read it. Are we going to read 1 Peter? Anybody who says no, please stand up. We'll just read this and then we'll go over into the Lord's Supper, okay? Likewise, ye wives, 1 Peter 3:1, be in subjection to your own husbands. Now, have you ever had a problem in being subject to Jesus? Our wives have problems in subjection because we make it difficult for them. We're not like Jesus. That if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conversation of the wives. That's our neighbors watching us. And how we commune with each other, our communion. While they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, whose adorning let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting their hair and wearing of gold or putting on the apparel. That means that our Ethiopian sisters are not wrong in plaiting their hair. He's just saying it's not that. That is there. A wife makes her hair nice for her husband. She takes care. She wants to look beautiful. And these curls are there. And they are adorned. But it's not that. It's what's behind it, what's underneath the skin. But let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy woman also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands. That is a testimony. When they see that our wives are loved, and in being loved, they are subject. They are happy. They are leading on our breast. And the neighbors come and ask you, hey, this works. What's the secret? Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham. You see, but we must not forget the one to the other. Abraham
had to obey Sarah, didn't he?
The Lord said to Abby, what did Sarah say?
Do it.
I'm so happy that I do what my wife tells me when the Holy Spirit speaks through her. And I commune with her and we reason together. I take her seriously. She is my helper. Do you know why she's my helper? Because I am constantly helpless. Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughter she are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them. Now, there's more. This is dwell with them. This is body, soul, and spirit. It's complete communion. Dwell with it. Never don't let each other go. Give yourself to your wife. Wife, give yourself to your husband. It keeps you safe. According to the knowledge, given honor unto thy wife, as unto a weaker vessel. Now, this word is dodgy. You know, my wife is not weak. I got a strong wife. I was in India for 5 years, and my wife was at home taking care of a family of five. And I was out there 6 months in the year, and another 3 months I was on the road in Europe, sharing with brothers and sisters who were supporting our ministry. I was away from home 9 months and 12. And my wife did the full work of a man and a woman at home. She's strong. She's not weak. Do you know what it means, fragile? The weaker vessel. When it comes to this here, I'm the weaker vessel. My wife is fragile. I got to wait. How I can, you know, it's not a football team. It's a love relationship. Walk with your wife in love. There's a lovely little booklet there written by Lloyd Pooley of Calvary Chapel Old Bridge. It's just so thin. It's a wonderful book. Walk in love. And walking with my wife, I've learned to understand that she's fragile, especially when she's pregnant. She's so different. Not only the shape of her body, everything changes. You know, and oh man, you don't do anything wrong when your wife is pregnant because she'll crack up. She breaks into tears. A wife is fragile. A wife is like a vessel of crystal. She reflects the life of God. It's there in Genesis, through the woman. Through the woman, it will come. The Savior, the beauty. She reflects Christ. What a privilege. And men are made of clay. Some are made of stone. But Lord would have us break us and make us into clay. And I've kicked clay pots. And it hurts. But they stand there and it doesn't affect them. But I've kicked a crystal glass and it breaks. And we must watch how we love. He is gentle. He is so sensitive. He is meek. And he's mild. Our Savior is gentle. How many gentlemen, pastors and gentlemen, do we have this morning? I'm not a Britisher. I don't know what I am. I was saying that. It's a British word. But we should be gentle men. Strong, but gentle. There's a Thomas here. He's a pastor here. I don't know where he is. He's there somewhere. And he shook hands with me about 8 years ago. I'll never forget it. He's the guy. My hand's like a fish. And this guy took my hand. He's a little guy. I said, "Hi, Peter." Strong.
But he's a potter by trade.
He's strong, but hey, the palms of his hands are like a baby's bottom. Strong, but gentle. Gentle with your wife. Be good to her. Try to understand her and love her as the Lord loves you. Now we're going to the supper. I'm way over. Please forgive me this morning. We're going to read from Matthew. We're going to come and have fellowship. We're going to remember what he is to us men in order that we can be to our wives what he has been to us faithfully through the years. And I want to read from Matthew chapter 26 and verse 21. And as they did eat, he said, "Verily I say unto you, that one of you shall betray me." And they were exceeding sorrowful. I mean, betrayal for a man is so embarrassing. Cowards in the army, they were shot. We were shot for betrayal. It was so embarrassing. That was the ugliest thing about it all. To be a wimp. We were all warriors. And these men are together here. Fishermen. They're warriors. And they were exceeding sorrowful. You see, it hurts. And it's very embarrassing, getting back to the introduction. When we come to the table and our weaknesses in the communion, in breaking the bread and drinking from the cup, we are aware of our weaknesses. It's embarrassing, it hurts, it's ugly sometimes even. But we must come. We can come. He wants us to come to the table this morning. He wants us to come and drink from the cup of his suffering. The broken bread, the brokenness, in great brokenness. Brokenness. And they were exceeding sorrowful and began every one of them to say unto him, "Lord, is it I?" I love that. Their consciences spoke to them. And they all in their hearts, it was Judas, but they all said, look, let's not point at Judas. Me and you, we should answer this question for ourselves. Lord, is it I? Am I like that? Is that what I'm like, Lord? When I come to the table, I see you and I see me. And I understand that, oh, Father, how can you love me, a man like me? Filthy, unclean, filthy rags. Even my ministry, all my ministry are like filthy rags. Lord, what do I have to bring to you but that which is mine, my sin? That is humbling. But I must ask this question. Is it I, Lord? I'm capable of everything. There's nothing I cannot do or would not do. I've done it all before I got saved. But even today, if I leave, you know, this yoke with him, I'm in danger. This yoke with my wife, I'm in danger of doing these things I never believed. I thought it was only Judas. But it's me. The danger is there. Stay close to your Lord. Stay close to your wife. That's the most beautiful thing he's ever given to you, pastors. Love your wives. And he answered and said, "He that dippeth his hand with me in the dish, the same shall betray me." We can be so close in a Christian fellowship, in a church movement. Oh, we can be so close and so far away. The Son of Man goeth in one bowl, so close, dipping in with our hands. The one has understood grace, he is saved, he is born of the Spirit, and the other hand is a religious hand. The Son of Man goeth as it is written of him, but woe unto that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It had been good for that man if he had not been born. Then Jesus, which betrayed him, answered and said, "Master, is it I?" We have it again. He said unto him, "You know. You said it." And as they were eating, Jesus took bread. And now we are coming together to the table. Reading these words of introduction.
that we read so often, we've memorized them. I hope they reach our heart. He took the bread and blessed it and broke and gave it to the disciples and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." And he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, "Drink, ye all of it, for this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink in the new with you in my Father's home." We see his suffering, but we see what his suffering has brought us. This meal that we will have, he's waiting to serve us. He came as a servant, he lived as a servant, brothers, and he's waiting for us at the table as a servant. And he says, "Come, let's eat and drink." His friends, all his friends, are invited. And if you have a withered hand, reach out and take the bread. Seek forgiveness, restoration in the bread and the cup.